From Studio 22, you're listening to ServeCast with your host, William Lamb. ServeCast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William.
Hey guys, welcome back to ServeCast 2019. Hard to believe, 2 years we've been playing this game, and I'm glad you're listening to us. My friends today in the room are Lily Felice. She is the Community Outreach Coordinator, and Jerry Redman, who is the CEO of Second Life Tennessee. We'll talk with them in just a minute. Three episodes you might want to go back and listen to when you hear our conversation today. Episode 32 with Nicole Lim, Freely in Hope, and episode 46 with Bob Rogers from Street Grace, and episode 52, which was January 19th, 2018 with Jerry Redman, and we talked about human trafficking. For those of you who might not be aware, January is Human Trafficking Month in the United States, so it's a great time for an incredibly necessary conversation about the unfortunate reality of how many people are being treated unfairly and what our response should be in that regard. Now, if you're in the Lee community, mark this date down, January 15, 7 p.m., Sexual Assault Awareness Event in partnership with Street Grace. And we're going to hear from a therapist and also a survivor of sexual assault. We'll be right back with our conversation with Lily and Jerry. Hey, and we're back. Welcome, Jerry. I'm glad you're here for a second time on our ServeCast. It's been a year, man. Can you believe it?
I cannot. Thanks for having me again, William.
It's crazy. A year.
Like smoke.
Yeah.
It's gone.
I gave you a hat last time.
You gave me a hat.
It would help you, maybe.
It was a cold day then.
This is true.
Bald heads need hats.
There you go. So any smart leader like yourself is going to surround themselves with awesome people. And Lily Felice is in the room with us today in Studio 22, and she's one of those awesome people. Lee University graduate, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, what year did you graduate?
2016.
Unbelievable, see? And I remember you when you were six, Lily. That's crazy. Yes. Yeah, it's a long time family friendship with her family, and we really won't go there today. It's not necessary. But you are the Community Outreach Coordinator for Second Life Tennessee. Can you define what that position really is real quick for us?
Well, as you know, in nonprofits, you wear many hats.
Yep.
And I love all of mine. I love engaging with the community. I'm a people person. So a lot of what I do is just equipping the community with the knowledge of human trafficking. We have H2101s, monthly H2101s at the Family Justice Center. And so you can find me there once a month. And what I like to do is really sit down with community members, engage with them, see what their perceptions are about the issue, and have them walk away with some knowledge. Mm. I also do different events, fundraising things, and partnerships with local small businesses, entrepreneurs, and people who, you know, sell things. If you sell anything, let me know.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So talking about this whole idea of educating and awareness, you know, we kind of talked about that last time you were here, Jerry, and unfortunately, I mean, the stats are just riveting, man. Is it now, it was 45 million, I suppose, involved in human trafficking back in 2017. Do you know what any current numbers might be now?
We don't have the latest numbers yet. We will probably within the next week, actually. I'm supposed to be part of a meeting with some folks out of D.C. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was over 40 million in terms of 17. The crime itself generates over $150 billion wow. annually on the global scale, $100 billion of that being in sex trafficking. And our best estimates are that the U.S. share of trafficking is about a third of that. Mm. So we're looking at upwards of $45 to $50 billion annually in the trafficking of persons of all types here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. So let me just jump to this question and just dig deep with it for just a minute. Why should Christians care about something this thing called human trafficking? And this is January. This is Human Trafficking Awareness Month in the United States. And why should Christians even turn their ear to something like this? I mean, it seems like just an insurmountable task, man. I mean, to really affect change is nearly impossible. Why should we care?
A lot of things going on in U.S. culture today. a lot of Christians are being called crazy, and sometimes maybe we are being called that for reasons we deserve. But we...
You're always going to get the candor when Jerry and I get in the room. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
But the core of Christianity is craziness. Mm-hmm. When you look at the incarnation, when you look at all of us being bearers of the image of God, Imago Dei, when you look at God taking on himself all of the pain and evil in the world and wiping it away through his death, giving himself over to death, and then coming back to life, and I could go on and on and on. Ours is a crazy faith, and to think that we can believe all of those things, but we cannot believe that we can actually eradicate this crime, mm-hmm. I think is actually an indictment mm-hmm. on the core of our belief. Jesus said in Luke 4, here's why I've come. I've come to set the captive free. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he was playing around. I don't think he was being simply metaphorical in that. And I believe it was President Lincoln who's credited at least as having said, if slavery isn't wrong, nothing's wrong. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Christians should be the leaders around this issue in every area of society. And many Christians here in the U.S. are. Mm-hmm. In fact, in areas of government, in nonprofit work, in business, we can talk about some of those folks that are right here in the Tennessee Valley, mm-hmm. in fact. And so this is at the heart of the gospel. And a Christian who isn't affected by this in terms of both their heart being moved, but also their intellect being engaged, mm-hmm. I think they've got a problem in terms of what their Christianity is really based on.
Yeah, and I appreciate you saying that, because I think the reality is a lot of times we pick and choose. You know, my heart is really mm-hmm. pulled into this thing. I mean, Lily, I've seen you grow up over the years, right? And I've seen some things that really grab a hold of your heart, passions, you know, things that were important to you. So why is Second Life Chattanooga or Second Life Tennessee, why is human trafficking? Why did you take this job, and why does it matter to you? And I'm asking you this not just from a employee perspective, but also from what I know of you, a very committed believer.
Yeah. Well, I took on this job because I saw the state of Tennessee mm-hmm. doing something about this issue. I saw that communities are really where the impact can begin. Of course, I've heard of this issue, you know, growing up in high school, the End It movement. And I remember writing a red X on the back of my hand. And I remember, you know, personally making that prayer, like, God, what are we to do of this? When will I ever be a part of actually fighting this? It's so big. So when I saw this opportunity, of course, I was thrilled, because I felt like a prayer was answered that I had forgotten about, because I was heartbroken. This is such a big issue. And why I think it's important is because the only way you're going to affect change is if you have these sort of conversations, is if you take time to sit down, learn, identify this, and actually do something about it. And the only way we're ever going to make an impact is by doing those little tiny HT101s, mm-hmm. Those human trafficking seminars where you learn how to identify the issue in your community. Mm-hmm. It's so important, because some people, they come to the, you know, HT101s, and they're like very concerned single mothers or college students who have heard about this crazy big issue. And we leave the place walking away with, okay, now I know what to do. Mm-hmm. And it's empowering. It's empowering people to be proactive and feeling like they are making a change. And that's why I wanted to be a part of that, mm-hmm. because it wasn't just some random, you know, big cause that I could maybe give a dollar or two for in one moment, but I could give my life to something where I could see an impact.
Mm-hmm. So define for us, Jerry, this term human trafficking, you know, because, I mean, in a world of, people who have been exposed for various crimes and indecencies and injustices created, you know, that they have done toward other people. There's a lot of conversations about consensual sex. There's a mm-hmm. lot of conversations about abuse. There's a lot of the whole Me Too movement. Educate us for just a minute on this idea of how do you really define this concept, human trafficking?
And I'd like to answer that two ways, both in terms of the legal definition, but also the need to change our terminology
okay.
going forward. And the U.S. definition of trafficking, this is by Trafficking Victims Protection Act enacted in 2000 by Congress, is the use of force, fraud, or coercion in order to commercially exploit someone for sex or for labor, or commercial sex involving a minor. And what makes it commercial is two parties agree that something has value. It could be money, drugs, anything, and then a minor has to provide sex to them. That's the commercial sex involving a minor. So force, fraud, or coercion, commercial. Those are the four key words around this. So no one has to be physically moved, although they are often physically moved as part of this. No one has to be, this is not an international border issue, William. Over 80% of the people trafficked for sex in the U.S. are U.S. citizens. Studies from 2 years ago showed that for that year, nearly 40% of the people trafficked for sex in the U.S. were trafficked by an immediate family member. So this is a homegrown issue. Mm-hmm. And our issue in the U.S. looks like it does pretty much everywhere else in the world. And so a lot of countries who are doing work against this as well have similar language in terms of their legislation. But looking forward, I think the word trafficking trips people up.
Sure.
And one of the things that we talk about a lot, not just within our organization, but with our partners in the state and around the country, is at some point we hope to replace that word trafficking with something that I believe resonates better and is more easy to grasp out in the community. Because to this day, I still go places, I speak, and people talk right here, be it in the Cleveland, Chattanooga area, people say, well, you know, because of I-75, I know we have, no, it's got nothing to do with I-75 or I-95 if you're on the East Coast or wherever you may be. And so over time, I think we'll come up with new language, new phrasing to help people better understand. We're talking about the exploitation of people.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about selling people for something. That's trafficking.
Mm-hmm. So in this whole concept of, you know, educating people on this idea of trafficking, what is Second Life doing? You say HT101. Unpack that a little bit more. Tell us exactly what you're doing when you say we are educating Tennesseans and anybody else. Actually, you have partnership with, you know, Bob Rogers and Street Grace. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, any of these types of movements usually have collaboration. It's necessary. Mm-hmm. So what are you educating, or how are you educating people?
So HT101, or Human Trafficking 101, is an opportunity for people to receive the free information that Second Life provides on how to identify the issue. You know, the first thing they're going to learn is, what is the definition of human trafficking?
Mm-hmm.
There's so much false information out there, myths and misconceptions that we address in the training. So in order for someone to walk away understanding something, I want to know where they're coming from. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, a single mother who saw something on Facebook about not going to a certain Walmart because they're afraid of, you know, their kid getting snatched up. Mm. And, you know, we tackle those things because I don't want someone leaving an HT101 afraid.
Right.
I want them to feel equipped and empowered because there are people in their community that are out there that are being trafficked. So they leave learning the signs, the red flags, and then, like you said, with those different partnerships and collaborative work, they are free to come to those HT101s, or we can go to them.
Mm-hmm.
You can go on our website and fill out a speaker request form. So any group that you have, a book club, a church club, some Lee students can come together, and if they want that information, we will go to them. We have a 25-county footprint of people who we can reach so that we can have those partnerships so that all of that information is accessible to them.
Mm-hmm. So let's do a little educating right now. What are some risk factors that kind of are identifiable as it relates to this crime?
There's something called the ACEs score,
okay.
Adverse Childhood Experiences. This has become a yardstick in the serving community. I know folks that you have here on campus that are going through programs where they're going to be serving children, even possibly folks in your School of Nursing and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
ACEs is a commonly used tool to measure what is the instances and the impact of adverse childhood experiences in someone's life, be they a child/adolescent or be they an adult. And it's based on a measurable scale. What was the level of trauma, et cetera, that they witnessed or that they endured.
So this is a scale that either a survivor or a observer would be able to use to identify the severity of the crime or the legitimacy of the crime?
ACES is a contributing factor to people more likely being drawn into the higher an ACES score for someone, the higher the likelihood that they could be a victim of some other type of trauma as they go through life. This is not solely the case all the time, but quite often when there's domestic abuse, sexual violence in the home, when there's heavy drug use, when there is the absence of strong, stable parenting, and I could go on as far as the list, then the higher the risk factors are that person could be trafficked. We quite often have seen situations where the trafficker was a family member or a romantic partner. We tell educators a lot, if you have a student who you know that formerly that student's work was strong, you see it beginning to fall off, you see an increased number of absences, you see some signs potentially of some physical trauma, maybe the word's getting back to you that student has talked about some recent sexual experiences and whatnot. We know those are red flags for any number of things.
Right.
But they are red flags for any number of things. Therefore, we need to respond appropriately. Or, for instance, here in our area, we have a lot of folks in the hotel industry who've done some great work around training their industry about the issue. And so do you have a couple checking into a hotel and there's a clear dominant person? They're doing all the talking. They have the ID. They insist that there be no maid service in the room. And for some reason, you've got a lot of traffic throughout the night that keeps coming in and out of your hotel once that particular couple has checked in. Those are red flags, and you can call the statewide or the national hotline if you're outside the state of Tennessee and simply report, we've got something going on our property that is concerning. And you can do that anonymously, and you're not violating any kind of code in doing that, but you could be saving someone's life. I had someone stop me recently and said, man, I've been waiting to run into you because I was out at a restaurant and I noticed something. And they began to tell me the story. And first of all, they were at the restaurant a couple weeks prior.
Right.
And they called no one. They waited to run into me, even though we had our statewide hotline poster hanging in their place of business. So I tuned them up a little bit and then said, you know, all you had to do was call the statewide hotline and just say, this situation looks off.
So, okay, Jerry, let's pause here for a minute. So why are people hesitant to report something like that? I mean, what are some ways that, let's say, the average listener is listening to us today, and you know, they're just struggling with this. They really care. They're compassionate. They're obviously Christ followers. I mean, there's a lot of people who are not Christ followers that actually, you know, hold to these same values and care deeply about this particular issue. But you know, these people that are listening and they're like, but man, I just don't know what to do. So so why is it that some people are so I don't know if resistance is the word as much as just can't pull the trigger to actually make the call. Does that make sense? Do you see that?
Yeah. We find that a lot of folks are just afraid because they don't know how the system works. If you have to go to court for anything, and even if you're not there as a defendant, maybe you've been called as a witness or whatever.
Sure.
Most people get freaked out by that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are fearful, especially with how connected we all are through social media and whatnot. They're afraid that if they do report something and somehow their name gets put out there, that could put them at risk. I understand that. I understand that fear. But we have, both in the state and then through our national partner out of D.C., the Polaris Project, a very simple and anonymous way to say, I'm at 123 Keith Street, and I'm observing something right now that it looks like someone may be in distress or may be being taken advantage of. and the car looks like this. And if that's all the info you got, that's all the info you need mm-hmm. to give, and you don't have to give a name or anything like that. And we also insist when we go out and talk to people, Lily does her 101s and other things that where she communicates with folks. You do not step in.
Sure.
You're not going to be the hero, the savior mm-hmm. here. This is why God made law enforcement. And so report what you see sure. and can and get yourself safely away from what could be a dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm. Hey guys, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back to continue this conversation. Don't leave. Hey guys, welcome back, and glad you're staying with us today. And we're going to continue this conversation with Jerry Redman and Lily Felice as we talk about this unfortunate reality of human trafficking. So we talked in the first few minutes of this episode today, Jerry. We talked a little bit about a response necessary from Christians. We talked about some defining terms that give some clarity to understand. We talked about what do you do if you're an observer and you think something is happening, right? But there's a lot of other deep issues. There's some other defining realities that, you know, that probably speak into this issue more than what we are aware of. Let's take pornography, for instance, right? It's just unreal the impact that pornography has on our culture, on people, in our country. Speak to that for a few minutes about how is that impacting this human trafficking business that's really kind of just unheard of that we're hearing.
We find pornography is not a contributing factor okay. to, it's not ancillary to, it's part of the overall trafficking milieu. Now, as we often say, not everyone who is in the commercial sex business is there through trafficking.
Right.
But many people in the commercial sex business are there through trafficking. Not everyone in the pornography world is being trafficked or is a trafficker, but many are.
Okay.
And it goes back to the same thing, force, fraud, or coercion. A former senior law enforcement official right here in Bradley County used to make this statement. He would, in speaking to groups about trafficking, he'd take his smartphone out and say, if I know where to go with a few thumb clicks, I can get a commercial sexual exchange underway right now. But there are two guarantees I don't get in that exchange. I don't get the guarantee of willingness, otherwise okay. the absence of force, fraud, or coercion, and I don't get the guarantee of age of majority, that I'm not going to be having sex with a minor. You don't get those guaranteed through porn either. Mm. And a lot of times we make those statements, especially the men in the room, you get those kind of, oh, goodness, sort of looks and moments. Because, unfortunately, the research continues to show that the use of pornography among both men and women
sure.
is rampant and growing. I've talked to a lot of mental health professionals that talk about the deeply addictive effects of pornography and how tough it is to unwind mm-hmm. that addiction in terms of what it does chemically
right.
to the brain. And so there are plenty of people that we know that they would never dream of engaging in sex with someone outside of their marriage, or certainly paying for it, much less someone that was there unwillingly. But their porn problem is part of this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And as Christians, we have to begin having adult, meaningful conversations about the porn in our church. Lily, we were in Minnesota in June, mm-hmm. was it? We spoke mm-hmm. at a conference there on the campus of Bethel University
sure.
there in St. Paul. And we did a workshop, and that was one of our main points. But since it was a faith summit that we were at, and we emphasized the fact that if we as the church, especially the expression of the local church, if we're not going to tackle this piece of the issue, then we have an incomplete response to it. And frankly, we have people who are unknowing perpetrators, if you would, that are also suffering because of their addiction, and they have nowhere to turn about it. People who are actually contributing to the issue are also suffering because of their addiction. And in a lot of cases, we don't view them as very sympathetic. But what if we set them free? Mm. And what if the church was a safe place for them to lay their burden down?
See, now, I like that. And I know there are some churches. There's quite a bit of organizations and churches in the Christian movement in the U.S. that I'm aware of, you know, that are really beginning to have this conversation. But the church isn't the only place we need to have this conversation,
no,
right?
No, not at all. Yeah, by no means. This is a societal conversation. And you made mention earlier in the conversation, it's whether you're a person of faith or not, or whatever your faith construct is, this is a human issue.
Right.
And so if you care about humanity, if you care about what it looks like to live in a well-formed, healthy society. Frankly, if you care about business in your town,
yeah,
you know, if you want industry to thrive in your town, if you want things to go well in your town, if you want good schools and whatnot, let's stop trafficking.
So let's talk about some specifics as it relates to what Second Life Tennessee has been doing since we had you on the podcast last time. Either one of you guys, what are some specific things you are doing to affect change? You mentioned earlier, you know, if we get in the room, we educate you. What's happening? What's really going on?
Well, I can speak on the community outreach.
Okay.
So we had our first inaugural 5K called Finish for Hope.
You tried to get me to run in that, and I couldn't. I was out of town.
I know you're a marathon runner. I know
I was
you're
out
a runner.
Of town. I'm sorry.
Next one's coming up
the
soon.
The next
will
one
you?
Will, yes. Mark your calendars for.
Remind me when it is.
I will.
And
in
I will
April.
Try to do it. April, okay.
All right. So in that vein, being out in the community has been very important to us.
Okay.
You know, we've been around for over 12 years, and some people still don't know that there's help. Earlier you said, you know, why are people afraid mm-hmm. of making the hotline call? And some people are just unaware that there is help. So a lot of my efforts have been with partnerships, with events, and things of that nature to just help people be more informed and be more trauma-informed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, anytime I'm partnering or having a meeting with someone, my goal is not to beat down every business and say, you're not doing something about this, you know, hidden community crisis. You mm-hmm. can be proactive. Rather than saying, you know, we are aware of this issue, so let's be proactive together. Let's mm-hmm. make this community safe. And it's been such a great, you know, work for me. It's been very rewarding to see how many people do care. They just don't even know that mm-hmm. we're here.
So you're in Chattanooga predominantly, but you said you have the footprint of 25 counties. And I know, Jerry, last time we talked, there were some expansion offices or something like
yeah.
that, or at least the conversation about expansion offices. So what exactly is yeah. going on with regard to that?
We've opened our office in Cookeville.
Okay.
Lily had mentioned earlier that we have a satellite office in the Family Justice Center for Chattanooga and Hamilton County. Well, there's an FJC also for the Upper Cumberland
okay.
there in Cookeville. So we have a satellite office there, and we're not finished looking for more office space. That 25 county footprint is what is known as Lower East Tennessee,
right.
which includes where we are here in Bradley, but it goes all the way to the Kentucky line, William. So we've got a quarter of the state that we're responsible for according to the governor's services delivery plan. A couple of other things that are new, and I'm not saying it because she's sitting here next to me, but having Lily come on our team, she was just about to onboard about the time I was sitting here with you
right.
last year. And she has blown up our brand in terms of people knowing who we are, but also the connections mm-hmm. that we have. It's just a regular thing for me to be out of the office for a while, come back, and Lily says, oh, by the way, we're doing this, 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 and this.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten to where now I'll get asked from people, oh, are you guys partnered with so-and-so and so-and-so? I have to go to her or somebody else
yeah.
in the office. Because she and the others are just out there running so hard,
mm-hmm.
I can't keep up with our partnerships. On a little larger scale, something to report that we may have touched on last year, and that is Shared Hope International out of D.C. does an annual national ranking. They do a state report card, all 50 states, on how is each state doing around six different markers regarding its legislative response to the issue of trafficking. And in November of just this past year, 18, we were awarded for the second year in a row the number one slot in the country in terms of our collaborative work. in the state. Now, Tennessee's ranked at or near the top for a while, but for 2 years in a row, we've been declared the number one state about our in terms of our legislative work. And there's a whole lot of partnerships that go into that legislative piece. One of the leading legislators here in the state that has been such an important partner is now the mayor of Cleveland, Kevin Brooks.
Yes.
And he's been vital in the work. So, there, you know, there's another Lee connection there in terms of what Lee is doing to impact this work. There's an on-campus group, Cleveland Against Sex Trafficking, that's been in existence for some time. Dr. Daniela Augustine is their faculty sponsor and advisor, and I met with them the week of finals to talk about some next steps that they're taking. In fact, they're going to be very key to us rolling out a brand new awareness campaign that Lily has developed that's launching February 1, Lily, so that we can get that hotline number in every smartphone in our footprint.
Okay.
It's a big, big deal. Very, very big deal. In fact, the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation is pretty excited about it, but we haven't given it to them yet. You'll get the benefit,
it's
but you can't have it.
It's called job security, Lily. Keep doing the good stuff. So, yeah. All right, well, give me some good news. Tell me something good that's happening in modern-day slavery, right? So, I mean, you know, you guys have got stories, I'm sure, of, you know, terrible news, but also, is there any good news? Is there anything we need to celebrate that's happening well with regard to Second Life and this eradicating of the problem, as you say?
Yeah, the good news is that we have something new coming. Of course, modern-day slavery has been in existence since the beginning of time, but with these partnerships and these events, with the networking that we have just rebranded the hotline number, and we have a new awareness campaign coming out called Eyes Up. Oftentimes, traffickers tell their victims to keep their eyes down because, you know, it's about control and not being able to self-identify. And as we know, you know, making eye contact with someone, it just takes that much to read the body language of someone who is being controlled. And so we had partnered with an event that came to Chattanooga called Make a Mark. And we partnered with a team of creatives who donated 12 hours of their time, graphic designers, and different artists. And we branded, we rebranded the hotline number. And so with that, we have a new campaign coming out, awareness campaign called Eyes Up. And we're really excited about it. We've got bumper stickers. We've got tote bags, camping mugs, posters, and decal window stickers that say, "In this place, our eyes are up." This is February.
Goes live February. And it's one of the things we're really excited about is it's very cool, user-friendly, simple. There's no scary. The graphics are not scary in any way. It doesn't look ominous. And it was Lily's brainchild. This was her deal. And so she found a creative team, and they donated their time and their expertise. And we can't wait to roll this thing out. And along with that, there are things, for instance, like doing surprise baby showers for survivors.
Yeah, I like that.
That we've done. We were on the way to the airport to go to that conference in Minnesota, and somebody brought up the fact we had a survivor getting ready to move into an apartment, and somebody else said, "Hey, you know, do they have everything they need for their bathroom and kitchen?" And somebody else said, "I don't think they do." And Lily's sitting in the back not saying anything, and then 2 minutes later, she's already put together a thing on Amazon, you know, where people could go and buy everything that they needed on that gift registry to outfit that woman's bathroom and kitchen. And we've done a lot of that in the last year.
So speak to the person who is listening to this episode today who is either been trafficked or they're currently being trafficked. What do you say to them?
It is a long road of recovery, and we know that. We have worked with trafficking survivors now for 11 of the 12 years that we've been doing this work. And I know there's nothing easy about it. But we have seen so many people reclaim, and not just reclaim, not just recover, but truly begin new lives, the lives that they wanted. And so to that listener, they're not always she, but most often they're she. So let's say it's she. That's available to her. She can have the life that she's dreaming of. It will be hard. It will be difficult. But there are literally hundreds of people gathered together, connected with all sorts of professional skill sets, but also with great hearts and minds that can help her not just get where she wants to go, but become who she wants to become. And she gets to choose. She gets to choose how that looks and the speed at which it goes. If she'll let us help, then we and our partners can.
How do people reach you?
423-994-4857, secondlifetn.org, contact@secondlifetn is our main email address. We're also on Facebook, on Instagram, and on Twitter, @secondlifetn. secondlifetn.org is our website.
One more question for you, Jerry, and we'll get one more question for you, Lily, and we'll close this episode today. But to the trafficker, Jerry, what do you say to the trafficker who might be listening to this today that may have been trapped themselves into becoming a trafficker and have now, you know, just continued to do what happened to them? What do you say to them today?
You make a great point, because typically we just want to hate these people. And frankly, typically I just want to hate these people. And it took me a long time to be willing to consider that there may be a more problematic, complicated backstory. And so to him,
sure,
I will say there's hope for you too. This is not who you were made to be. And I truly believe there's some part of you inside that's dying. And although we don't work with the perpetrators, we know people who do. So sure, there's hope for you too.
Good.
There's hope for you too.
Good. Lily, to your generation, to this generation that so often is misread, what do you say to your peers? What do you say to those people who still may be waffling in their own mind, trying to find a place that they can be committed to like you have found? What do you say to that crowd?
I say, you know, there's room for many at this table. You know, fighting an injustice that is on a human level, it takes a human. That you don't have to be well-versed to try to contribute in some way. I have learned so much by being here, a part of Second Life. But what I've brought to the team is what I know. And I've brought my best, and my passion got me here. Mm. Now, of course, passion can only go so far, but we do not do this alone. I mean, it takes a village. The community members that come and get educated are just as much a part of fighting this, because they're the ones going out there equipped and ready to make that call. So I say, bring what you have. I say, bring us your questions, and together with a collaborative effort, you know, we can find something perfect for you.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, it's been great to have you in the studio again, man. We'll have to do it again. So, Lily.
Love you. Thanks.
Hey, guys, you heard me say this before, and you'll hear me say it again. You're made for more. Whatever's going on in your life today, you're made to make an impact in someone else's life. And maybe you need an impact to be made on your life. Well, I trust the Creator, and I believe His timing is correct, and I believe He can arrange that. So if you will step out today to make a difference in somebody else's life, I'm confident that God has a way of taking care of yours as well. So as always, at the end of these episodes, you're going to hear a worship tune, which will give you time to contemplate and think about what's happening today. And remember, if you're in the Lee community, January 15th, 7 p.m., with Street Grace here on the campus of Lee University. Have a great time. We'll talk to you next time on Surfcast.
This life is a journey we walk by faith, and there will always be the mountains in our way. But right here in this moment, may our strength be renewed as we recall what God has done and how we've seen Him move. If there's anybody here who's found Him faithful, anybody here who knows He's able, then say, anybody here brought through the fire?
Servcast. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes and share us on Facebook. Hey, if you've got any questions, send them to servcast22@gmail.com. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Servcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, his guest, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.